Chikapa Enoch Pirri. Let's talk to the man. I'm so happy to have you here, man. It was so good seeing you on Idols last night. You really are just, you're an unbelievable talent to watch. And, you know, I've seen you from a distance before. I've been to one or two shows where you were. I've obviously seen you on TV. But to see you live again last night, it just reminded me what a genius you are. You know you're a genius.
I wouldn't say I'm a genius.
You're a genius.
But come we're on. Having fun. Just fun.
You love performing, don't you?
Yeah, I'm a show off. I believe that's the only time where I'm in control.
You say that, but I think the music's really in control, not you.
I think I'm in control for... I am an extension of the music. I have a relationship with the music, and so we're one and the same.
Yeah, but you dance around like the music is really just making you do things that you don't even have a say over.
Maybe. I would say I'm too much of an a cheapskate.
You just go with the flow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, Ray, yep. Tell me, what's been happening lately? Because you've had such an illustrious career. It must be difficult when you get to your age and you get to your stage of the career where you don't really have anything to prove, but people want more. You have to decide what you're going to give.
I think I find myself in a bad spot for the band that I lead is a cult band. So you cannot really outgrow that. A lot of people grew with us through our music. Now it's a little bit difficult to bring in new stuff or new music.
But you're talking about Stimela.
Mm.
Okay.
It's not difficult. They remind me very much of the Grateful Dead, which used to be one of those bands in the States. Wherever we go, people want songs that mean something to them, because they want us to remind them of their youth. So even if we sneak in new songs, we don't get good response.
They want the old nostalgia.
Mm, to boast to their friends and say, watch, listen to this. This is what's going to happen into that song.
Yeah, so I suppose it brings back memories, but that's not a bad thing, is it? Does it frustrate you that you can't come up with too much new stuff?
It's frustrating because they're not receptive to the new stuff. They're more trapped still in the 80s. They keep on saying, no, give us Zwagala. Zwagala is 27 years yeah. old. Why should I carry on playing Zwagala if I haven't written any new music? So yeah. I guess on my own, I need to come out with solo projects. That way then I can play the music I want to play.
Because you've obviously developed and you want to take music in new directions.
Definitely.
But it's very, very difficult to take the crowd with you.
It's impossible.
Do you think it's a South African problem, or do you think it's a thing with the world, where if you were established as a 1980s artist or a 70s artist or whatever, that's kind of where they want to keep you?
They own you. I sometimes say that we are a human jukebox, because people call songs that they want to hear, then we play them.
Yeah.
And it's not nice to keep on just playing one song for almost close to 30 years, because Stimela is 34 years now. So I can't keep on playing Highland Drifter.
Yeah. No, I understand. But for the crowd, every time they hear it, they love
that.
It.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm.
And I mean, no, there's no money in album sales anymore. Now it's performances, right?
It's performances, and also we're supposed to be very brave and move into new technologies. We need to have concerts now that you can simply download the performances.
I love your collaboration last night with Beatenburg. I mean, Beatenburg is probably the coolest. When it comes to cool, like young white guys, these are just like hipsters from Cape Town. It doesn't get much cooler than that. And you made them even cooler, if that's possible, you guys were collaborating.
It's so funny. My daughter is a friend of Beatenburg, and she also performs a lot with Crazy White Boy.
Yes.
Nonku.
Mm. Right.
She kept on telling me about Beatenburg. Then Farai also said, hey, Beatenburg would like to collaborate with you. And I said, who's Beatenburg? Then said, no, there's this young man called Matthew. He would like to collaborate with you. I said, no, okay. Send me a file of his music. He did. And then I had Pluto. And I said, that's hip. Because yeah. they're very brave. I think most of South African artists need to look at what Beatenburg has done. they're not afraid to do a South African pop culture of magnitude, mixing all the elements that we have in the country.
But isn't it also true that they're one of the reasons I think they're cool is because they're just very, they're very chilled, they're themselves. And this is something you got into a long while before it was cool. You know, people used to try to put on a show, like perform, try to impress the audience. They would either try to be like an international artist
and forget,
or copy the best South African artist. But you did you.
And we were very lucky because I was a producer for the Gallo Record Company. So I would hear things and I would develop new vocabulary. And also we were a session band like the Booker T and the MGs of the 70s and the 80s. So we became so good. We had a vocabulary of magnitude. Hence I started the Stimela fusion type of Afrofusion. So I guess it also boils back to your passion for what you do.
I think it's hard though for people who don't understand music. And I don't think there's anything I'm more jealous of than the ability to compose a song. How does that work in your head? Because I'm fascinated by, is it when you're in bed? Is it when you're in the shower? Is it while you're driving your car? And some kind of melody pops into you. How does it work?
Sometimes the melody becomes the focal point. Sometimes you've written a subject matter that opens you to other avenues. Or maybe you pick up the guitar, then suddenly you feel a riff. You want to start playing a riff, and then that riff will influence the lyrical content. It differs. I don't know how other people write songs. I sometimes look at kids, they're playing.
Yeah.
And my subject matter begins from there, like I see the world through the eyes of the child, because suddenly you see this innocent young person who's about 3 or 4 years doing some amazing things, and they inspire you to start saying that, I was a child once. Darkness was menacing, daylight intimidating. Who is there for you except the... You are brave. It's a new world out there. Songs are like that.
It sounds almost like each song is a child.
Definitely. They're not homogeneous. But then if you... There's a pop culture.
Yeah.
Pop culture is a tendency of developing and churning out new heroes.
Yes.
It's either they are pretty or either they are... cool boys, or either they are marketable. Then when you produce such a musician or a song writing for such people, you make sure that they're gonna do their best to line up that music and their personality as one.
But do you when you were producing for Gallo, you would look for specific things and you would try to get the best out of these artists? How do you know what to look for?
We used to go... What is said now is that around Gauteng or Johannesburg or Pretoria, for that matter, there are no social spaces for live music. We had a better chance when there were spaces for live music.
Where did you go in those days?
You had the Roxy, you had the Chelsea. There were so many clubs. Then you could hear potent stuff there, and young talent came out, and you could say that, oh, wow. Listen, that person is playing a mean lick. Then you want to listen to the next song. Then you hear that he keeps on repeating the same lick. Then you say, no, he needs to practice.
Okay.
But then that's when we had bands like your Trevor Rabin.
Yeah.
Rabbit.
Yeah.
We had great songwriters like Patrick Van Black, who did Joy, who wrote Joy. There was so much energy happening, and the subject matters were so open. We had a lot to write about.
Is that
about.
Gone because there isn't a place to hear it anymore? Is that all? Because surely the place to hear it now
Let me be
is
honest.
Everywhere. It's on the internet.
Let me be honest. The platforms are there. Yeah. But now everybody sounds the same because they're downloading beats instead of writing songs. South Africa now, we're lacking people who really write songs.
Yeah.
And it's that hooks.
That is the hardest part of the whole thing, is writing the song. That's why I take it back to where you were saying how a song comes to you. Is it the lyrics that come? Is it the melody that comes? Is it just a riff?
I think it has something to do with the subject matters. Look, there are a lot of young people who write well.
Yeah.
But then if you write with no reason and no purpose, you will be one and parcel of the run of the mill, where you simply say, okay, what is hip is going to be why chukucha. It's just anthemic and something that you're saying, but you're not teaching anybody. You are not creeping into someone's heart. The best example was Idol's performance.
Mm-hmm.
They were celebrating 20 years.
Right.
And those 20 years, each and every song that was released 20 years ago has a lot of meaning.
Sure.
And the songwriters, look, Babyface had about 4 songs, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. There was Tony Braxton, Tevin Campbell.
Boys to Men.
And there was one other one, too, that he produced that was on last night.
I remember.
What was it? Can We Talk? Yeah, that was Tevin Campbell.
Can We Talk?
What a great song, huh?
And even Bryan Adams, for that matter, if you listen to that, please forgive me.
Yeah.
So we need people that can simply internalize what they're hearing. Because we find ourselves in same situations, but we haven't been lucky to experience it the same way that the songwriter has written.
I don't want to get into too much heavy music here, but I know that there are people who are listening to us who just love this stuff, that where you get down into the bare essentials of what makes a great song. But Ray Peary, to have the career that you've had, is there anything you look at now in modern music that you're jealous of, that you didn't have through your career, that you wish you had when you were at the, you know, when you'd started Stimela, for example, when you were working with Paul Simon in the 80s? Is there something that you look at today and you're jealous of young artists now?
At some point in time I was, because I didn't understand when Kwaito started.
Yeah.
I was not jealous. It's because I got back from the States, then I heard all this new music, but it sounded strange because it had no tonal quality. It had just only a beat, and it's like you're taking a bottle and you're hitting it, and then you sample that.
Yeah.
But that was very brave of those young guys.
Take a bottle and hit it, and you've got quite a music.
And also, their subject matters. It was street music, but it never grew to be phenomenal.
Mm.
Zola came in with a different style. That was cool. I remember one time he had something like an operatic, a singer singing in one of his Kwaito. So it kept on growing bit by bit, but then the subject matter didn't belong to Kwaito. Kwaito as a musical genre was great for the body.
But not for the mind.
Not for the mind.
Well, I mean, that also goes back to what you were saying just now about the subject matter and composition.
Mm.
You have to have something, it has to mean something. So when you were making music right in the beginning, what was informing you? Was it the political situation? Was it the fact that there wasn't enough representation of traditional African music? Because you bring some of that in. I mean, your fusion styles, all kinds of things, but Was it because of that? Was it society? Was it the fact that people were going out and having fun at night, but by day it was just oppressive?
My story is very simple and quite funny. When I came to Johannesburg, I was a dancer, 1967.
By the way, when you move on stage, those knees, I don't know what they're doing, man. Something funny is going on with your knees.
That started from the puppet master. My father was a great guitar player. He had a bass drum,
yes,
and a guitar and puppets hanging on his the neck of the guitar.
And you would watch these puppets?
So, yeah, and I would accompany him sometimes where he was performing for parties or either Stockfels.
That makes sense, because that's what it looks like.
Then it stayed with me until up to date.
It's amazing. I love it. It's got to be, you're the only person I know who does that. Dancing.
I remember 1967. I was doing my JC, which today, what do you call JC? Junior certificate?
It's like a standard 6 or like a standard 5.
No. Because after JC, you went to varsity.
Oh, no, then it's the matric, yeah.
Off then.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
When education was still cool, very cool.
All right. All right, let's not get all political now.
So what happened is that I went to the Lowveld Showground. There was a group from Johannesburg EMI called Five Boys. They used to be the backing band of the Dark City Sisters. It was like the Randister show, but it happens always in August. I went on stage and I danced. I made about 35 friends. 35 friends in 1967 was a lot of money.
Yeah.
Then they requested me if I could join them. I left them with them that night and came to Johannesburg. I knew nobody.
So you came here as a dancer?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it progressed. I had some relatives in Daveyton. I went there, but I was playing guitar. I was a cardboard guitar player. I didn't want people to know because my father loved Charles Jacoby, country and western music.
Oh, wow.
There's a very thin line between Mpatanga and country and western.
Really?
Believe you me.
I've never heard that comparison before.
If you really listen to some of the hillybilly, really hillybilly music, you'll hear the licks, the guitar licks.
Yeah, and maybe so, you're right. That's starting to sound...
And this is what makes me excited about Bietenbeck. They're not afraid. There's so much music out there. They're not afraid experimenting and finding something potent that they can say, hey, let us have fun with this. They're breaking the rules somewhere, but those rules are meant to be broken.
Okay, but hang on. So you used to hide the fact that you were a guitar player, and then you started telling me about how your dad was influenced by country and western music.
Mm.
But you haven't told me why you wouldn't play publicly for a while on your guitar.
It's because I didn't believe that I could play well. I didn't have the tools to really, like, say... I knew that there was a C major, there was all that, but I could not understand, before you get that C, what do you need to do? What scale do you
start on?
Then I bought myself Alfred's picture chord book and taught myself to follow the right way. Because without those tools, it's so difficult. Look at Matthew. Look at, I'm sorry to say this, Bietenbeck.
Mm.
They are educated musicians,
right,
musically.
Yes.
So it's easy for them to have a beautiful conversation through their music.
Is it harder if you're not educated musically?
It's tough because you don't have the basic logic of how you can connect that and that, those dots.
But Ray, isn't this where talent trumps education every time? I mean, some of the greatest guitarists in the world are self-taught.
They are, but also they do need to enhance that by simply studying a little bit to enhance.
So you taught yourself completely?
Yep.
Never had a formal lesson?
No, I never had a formal lesson.
Can you write music?
I can.
Sure. You taught yourself all of that?
There's so much information out there. That's why I like people like Chris Botti when he says that if you want to be good, Sting told him that practice, 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 and make friends with Sting. Then you will succeed. And which is true. And if you don't practice, then you're going to lose it.
That is true, but I'm always curious about this whole thing. Do you have to be educated musically, or can you get by on talent alone if you're prepared to work hard?
It's easy to pick up the instrument, and it's difficult to put it down. You see, talent alone cannot get you far, because you won't be able to change with times.
Mm.
You'll be stuck with one thing that you know. But if you have a little bit of information, then the horizon is much more clearer and wider. The same thing applies to a radio jock.
Mm.
If he's not worldly, he doesn't read, he doesn't know a thing about current issues, what is he talking about?
Yes.
You know, you keep on just going on, growing.
It's just a hot air balloon. Like most of them.
Oh, that reminds me, one of my lyrics is it's talking about Red is playing silly tunes. And
What song is that? I'm going to listen to it straight after this.
It's from the Unfinished Story album, which had a very controversial lyrics.
Did radio stations not want to play it when you put it out?
There was a song called Hey People Listen to Your Radio, Something's Happening. Yeah. Mama's Boy Got a New One for You. So it says, Red is playing silly tunes, empty speeches like hot air balloon.
Oh, there we go. See? I love that. Oh, I think I'm going to make that my theme song. Can I ask you about just your friendship with Paul Simon?
I have a very strange relationship with Paul. Each time it comes, I want to laugh, but also at the same time I say, but I learned a lot through that relationship.
Is he a very complicated man?
I say that only he knows why he's doing what he's doing. He comes out like a very understanding person.
Yeah.
Let there be success, then you'll know what kind of a person he is.
What are you saying? That he's a bit of a bastard, actually?
I would say so.
Okay, so it comes down to business for him.
Not really. He's not an honest person.
Sure.
Look, if I give you a riff of my father's song that he taught me in 1964 called it Crazy Love.
Yes.
How can you go and say that you have composed that?
What song did he use that in?
Crazy Love.
Really? He took that, huh?
Yeah. Call Me Al. That is my riff and all that. It's my own songs.
Right.
From there, then he says that I'm the arranger of the Graceland album, instead of saying a co-composer.
So you should have had, in your mind, you're saying that you should have been co-composer with him on those
Definitely.
Songs.
Diamonds on the Soles of His Shoes, and African Skies, and all
this
that.
And have you ever brought this up with him?
Yes, I did. But
and what did he say?
No, he was smart. He kept me on the road for more than 5 years.
Sure.
In America,
this is a big thing.
In America, you have to lodge your complaint 36 months.
Yeah.
After 36 months, even if you try to resuscitate that, it's so difficult. You cannot. You have to lodge it within those 3 years.
Wow.
But during those 3 years, we're busy touring the world.
So he kept you busy so that you couldn't lodge your claim on the compositions.
I worked until up to 1995 with him.
Did you sit in the studio with him and you actually came up with these songs together?
Yeah, when he came, he even admits that on the box set of Paul Simon, where there's a documentary which we did in 2011 and came out in 2012 in celebration of 25 years of Graceland.
Yes.
Where he admitted that Graceland would not have happened if it was not for Ray Peary.
That's major. This is a very big deal. Are you very bitter about this? You must be.
I'm not bitter. I just want him to acknowledge someday and say, yes, I was wrong.
Is it about the money?
It's not about the money, because also I think I got something out of it.
Yeah?
What I got, respect. People would look me straight in the face and say, even at Dave Letterman's show, he once said that, oh, now you're going to be rich. Are you here for the money? And I said, no, it's not about the dollars. You know, it's about expressing myself and opening ways for other African musicians that they can collaborate with.
Now, when you hear Crazy Love or Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes or You Can Call Me Elle on the radio, do you get angry?
I don't get angry. I celebrate that. That I've made my mark on the world.
And just to be clear again, like, these are songs that you brought to Paul.
Definitely.
He didn't sit in the studio and say, why don't we do this, why don't we do that?
No.
These were songs you brought to him.
I brought.
He did not come up with...
Even the bass riffs and all that, Bagiti Khumalo didn't want to even play that bass riff on Diamonds on the Soles of His Shoes. But then I told him that, listen, today that is the biggest riff he had ever played. And that made, that got him to be the 10th. He was one of the top 10 bass players in the world because of that is Mpatlangalik.
That is something else, man. I didn't know this.
You're
educating me.
I'm sharing a lot. I share.
No. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that this is not the case. It's just it surprises me that. That someone like Paul Simon would just take this. Because, you know, in his story, he says he came up with it.
Listen to that. They're singing on F. The song is on F sharp because the album was already finished. Then we're entertaining the guest at the album launch. Then he held the album back and said, no, we need to put this song. That was Diamonds. Listen to the guitar when it comes in there. It's a different key.
Let's listen. This is amazing. Ray Peary is our guest.
Diamonds on the soles of his shoes. Diamonds on the soles of his shoes. Diamonds on the soles of his shoes. Diamonds on the soles of his shoes.
Totally different key.
Thank you. Because Black Mambazo were out in London, then they had to truncate the vocal.
This is you playing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you notice also, the first verse is 17 bars. The second one is 18.
Why is
because
that?
Because it was a jam.
She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes.
The first one goes...
And you're not angry.
I just want the truth out there.
This is like your child gets abducted and you're not angry.
I'm not angry.
Wow.
You're a better person than most of us.
Yeah.
The thing is that
before you here.
The thing is that he has the song that will remain a conscious. That's why when we're doing 25 Years of Graceland, it went back again into
number one. Mm. Yeah.
Because we went on tour. I look him straight in the eye and laugh at him.
But would you still collaborate with him?
I do. But now I'm wiser. I will call the shots.
From now on, you're going to say, I've got this great song, but guess what, Paul? It's mine. Son of a bitch. Come on, you could swear at him in Vernac. He wouldn't know what you were doing.
Yeah.
Otlanyela, Paul.
Yeah, that.
Oh. Man, is this... What is your favorite song that you did with Graceland?
The one that I loved most was Call Me Al.
Because that's such also a great song, huh?
Because also the subject matter there is about the strange world. He doesn't know the language, you know, but he's becoming soft in the middle.
Why am I soft in the middle now? Rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. what a song, huh? Don't want to be Cardboard Man or what? Cartoon Factory. Oh man, what a song. Unbelievable. Let's play that. I love this song. Man walks down the street, says, yeah, oh, what a song. What a beautiful song.
A man walks down the street, he says, why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot of redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger. Dogs in the moonlight. Far away in my well-lit room.
How did this song come to be?
I had a song that I did with the Kevin Kruger.
Mm-hmm.
When he used to be producing Pieter, some of the young musicians of the day, like Face, there were quite a lot of young.
It doesn't matter if you can't remember their names.
Young,
it's a long time ago.
Young pop artists.
All right.
So, after collaborating with Paul, he said, "There's a song that you once played." Called Mamelodi. I said, yeah. said, can you play it for me? And then I played it for him. So even now, if you take that, it was released around 1978.
Okay.
Now you take Graceland, Call Me Al was recorded in 1985 and 86. The riffs are the same. And the record that was released in 78 has got the same riffs.
Isn't that just a straightforward plagiarism then?
It is. What he did, he simply said that, I think Paul, when he came down here, he needed a faucet, a tap that he could open and outpour water. Because he spent more than 2 years trying to find the origins of a third-rate pirated copy of Jive Music.
Yeah. Mm.
Until Hilton Rosenthal helped him and said, no, I know this music. It's from South Africa. He had spent more than 2 years researching.
And he couldn't find the origins. Mm.
Then he came to South Africa, spent 3 full weeks.
How did you meet him?
It was through Hot Sticks Mabuse.
Ah, okay. Mm.
He invited him for
damn
dinner.
That Hot Sticks. You could have kept those songs for yourself.
Even Hot Sticks, the very first single that he had called Rise.
Yes, I remember that.
That's me there.
Is it really?
Yep.
It's you playing?
Me, my piano player, and the late Sipho Kumet. We sat at the studio for more than 3 days. We've been booked and this guy doesn't come. Then he said, no, you have to play anything. Then because we were tired, we wanted to go home. Then
yes.
We started doing Rise. Then he came here and said, yeah, that's it. That's the one.
I love that song too. That's a beautiful song.
So that is what established him before Burn Out.
That's right.
It was a single.
and it went worldwide, that song, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
This one.
Yeah.
So you're playing on this. Mm.
That's my guitar there.
That's you, huh? Mm. Sure. You've got a sound, man. Tell me, when you pick up a guitar, is there something special that goes on there? Do you actually care about the instrument?
I search for a similar energy from the song. Who is giving us a rhythm? Is it a groove thing or is it a melody thing? So then I try to compliment whoever is singing there. I don't want to play against.
Wow. And that takes a lot of holding back sometimes.
It doesn't.
It breathes
space. Most of the songs that have got space, that means they are songs. But once it starts having a lot of overdubs, it's an idea. It never grew up to be a song.
Do you have a special... You must have a few guitars that you keep.
Yeah, I have.
Are there any of them... Do they have names? Do they have personalities?
They have personalities. Like the one that I had...
Last night.
Last night.
That's a beautiful guitar, huh?
Paul gave it to me in 1985.
Okay.
After a session, he said, I would like you to try this guitar. It's a custom-made one. And then I got... hooked on that. Now I've got about 5 of those.
Sure. How many do you have altogether?
I think I have about 11 guitars.
And do you put them up? Are they in their cases? Are they in your music room? What kind of... How do you store them?
I have a little studio at home then, so sometimes I take them out, hang them.
On the walls?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So they climatize with the room.
Right.
Or otherwise the neck will bend.
Mm-mm. And the strings, you don't want the room to be too dry or too wet or too... Yeah, okay, I got you.
Like yesterday,
it's Farai... It's a whole thing, huh? You can't just put a guitar in a room.
Farai yesterday says to me...
Farai's here, by the way. He's sitting here quietly observing.
He says to me that, hey, why don't you put it in the back? I said, no, it's got to climatize in the room. The room temperature is very important. By the time we...
And did you think he was insane? Or have you heard of this before, Farai?
No, it's just that I mollycoddled my own Fender.
Okay, so you know exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Acclimatized to the room. Sure.
Artists.
Yeah, artists, they can be very temperamental. Are you a bit temperamental? Do you have rituals that you do before you go on stage?
I'm still afraid. I get butterflies. Like yesterday, I don't know how many times I went to the loo. just to take a lick and come back. The more...
It's the anxiety, huh?
Yeah. But
after all these years, you still get nervous.
If you don't get the butterflies, that means get out of the business.
Really?
Yeah.
You're too relaxed. You're not going to
perform.
Yeah,
you're taking it for granted. Because each and every audience is different. And we can all be in the same room and we'll hear the song differently. So always stay abreast. That's why I like having fun, so that I can make them happy. And once I make them happy, the energy that they give me makes me a giant.
But Ray, your life hasn't really always been easy.
It hasn't.
Car accidents. You should never drive. You should never. You should never be near a car, right? I mean, you've had some really some terrible luck with car accidents.
But you know, I sometimes say that who was it supposed to happen to, if not me?
But
what lessons have I learned from that? That's the most important thing. Maybe I'm a better human being today because of all those experiences.
But Ray, it's a horrible lesson to learn. I've had a couple of these myself, and your wife was killed in a car accident?
Yeah, in 2003, on the 18th of November. I don't travel. The 18th, I told him even last.
You still don't travel on the 18th, ever?
The 18th of every month, I just stay home and meditate.
Jeez, I'm glad we didn't book this interview on the 18th, or we wouldn't have got you here.
And also, I'm this type of person who makes sure that I notice the little things that nobody notices.
Like
ants.
Yeah.
Dates. Faces. Places. I will always... I'm like tuned to a different radar.
The details.
The details. Even sometimes the musicians hate me. They say that, oh, your music is too detailed. I said, no. It's because that note is there for a certain reason. I remember Paul Henmer saying to me that, Uncle Vampiri, they call me the vampire. Because if I've booked you into a session and you don't deliver, then you better pay me because now I'm teaching you to play.
That's incredible. So if people come to you, you've told them I need you to record in this session with me, and they don't play properly, you say, pay me now because you wasted my time. I have to educate you.
Beside that,
you love that.
You said you are a musician. And
you're not. You're lying.
If you're booked in a session, give me value. If I've written E, don't give me E. The song is in E. Give me B flat to complement my song.
Jeez, that's incredible, man. What's your favorite collaboration you've done? There must be some songs that you just, and you think back, that was a golden shining moment for you. There's so many with your career.
Yeah, there's a song that we did with Phil Coulter, which was great.
Phil Coulter?
Yeah.
Who is he? The name is familiar, but I can't remember.
He was Laura Branigan, an Irish singer.
Yes, I remember Laura Branigan.
Yeah, a folk singer from Ireland, because I love Ireland.
Phil Coulter.
Phil Coulter, yeah.
Oh, all right.
And another collaboration.
What made it fun to collaborate with Phil Coulter?
He gave me room. He gave me room to try my ideas on his songs. And he never said, no, don't do that. Don't do that. No. And which taught me one thing, that he's humbled by the value added. Even now when I collaborate with somebody, and if they are adding value to my song, they end up even getting credits for that.
You're generous.
I'm not generous. I'm paying it forward. What am I going to do when I'm dead and gone?
Yeah, well, Paul Simon could have paid it forward. He could have paid it forward. You could have twice the size of the house that you've got.
You can say that, but I don't appear in court for fighting with my wife at a garage.
No, I see what you mean. In other words, you'd rather avoid the conflict. And you don't mind if Paul calls you up tomorrow and he says, come, let's do something together. You'll still do it.
Yeah.
But now you're wiser to it.
I'm wiser and I'll stay away. I won't give.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you think he feels guilty? He must feel a little bit guilty about some of this.
Definitely. I don't think he sleeps well.
Does he not look you in the eye?
He looks me. Last time when we were here, I took him to the source where the farm at Crocodile Valley, where my school is. I took him there to say that this is where the songs that you call yours emanates from.
What did he say?
And
sure,
he's ready to help do a fundraiser for my school and stuff like that. So he'll pay bit by bit.
Okay. In other words, you'll get your value out of it.
But I know for a fact that countries that have laws of needle time will pay me very well. Only America don't pay needle time, but Paul has been collecting needle time all over the world.
Mm.
So those laws are binding. He's collecting money that is not his. It's for the session players who played on his album.
Do you believe in karma?
Very much so.
So it'll, what goes around comes
what
around.
What goes around comes around.
Tell me about the other collaboration. I interrupted you. You were saying that there was Phil Coulter and there was one other collaboration you were going to tell me about.
This one was of Willie Lee doing Graceland.
Mm?
And he wanted the original guitar player there. Willie Nelson.
Willie Nelson?
I prefer the Willie Nelson copy than any other of Graceland. Huh. Mm.
Let me see if I can find that, Willie Nelson. Got a whole bunch of stuff on here. Willie Nelson's quite an interesting guy. I mean, he smokes a lot of weed, huh?
Very, very interesting individual.
He smokes a lot of weed.
His band, they love him because he's so giving.
Yeah, he seems to me to also be one of those people who doesn't have anything to prove anymore. He's done it all. He's seen it all. He's not trying to make everybody else impressed. He's just doing his thing. He's a very genuine musician.
Very, very.
This is one with Willie Nelson in it. Graceland. Let's just take a listen to this. Amazing to think this guy, he's in his 80s. How old are you now, Brare?
I'm 67.
Young 67. Delta, shining like a national
guitar. I love
it. Following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War.
You prefer him to Paul Simon on this song?
This is happy. You can hear the happiness in it. It's lighter.
Pilgrims with families, and we are going Graceland. My traveling companion is 9 years old, the child of my first marriage. But I've reason to believe we both will be received in Graceland.
That's beautiful.
Joan Baez, we did Whispering Bells.
Joan Baez, huh?
Yeah. And people like your, very strange, Lou Reed's wife, the late Lou Reed's wife, what was her name? Playing a violin, very eccentric.
I don't know.
She had an album. She had a song called Monkey's Paw.
Yeah?
Yeah. Which I played guitar on in New York.
You've worked at the greats. You are the great. And we're very lucky to have you. I mean, all the way from like learning from your dad, who was himself an incredible musician and someone who really influenced a huge amount of your life and South African music.
I've been fortunate. And I inherited the wind. I'm a student of life, and so many things happened to me, and they've enriched me very well.
All I can say to you is that I feel like the younger generation owes you a kind of doff of the cap and a whole lot more respect. And if you ever feel like you're not getting it, please believe me that we appreciate everything that you've done right from the start. You've made us very proud to have local music that matters.
Oh. And I'm this kind of person that sometimes gets so emotional. I'm not used to compliments.
Well,
I take them in good.
It comes from the bottom of my heart. I'm someone who loves music, and it makes me feel so good when I can hear something that's real, and you are real. Someone here says on WeChat, Tobile. This is exactly the point I'm trying to make. I love Ray. He's a real musical mofo. Real musician, a dying breed, damn. Songwriting is dying. My center of gravity is jazz, but well-written songs still kill and give me goosebumps.
That's true.
Thank you, Brare. Pleasure to see you, man. And thank you for all the music that you've given us over all these years. Long may it continue. Only a young 67. We've still got time.
We still have
time.